Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's up, everybody? It's Chris Mannix. Howard and I are off this week taking a little break before we get back into the NBA, training camps, all the good things that happen in the month of September. But here's the SI Open Floor guys filling in for us during this break.
Welcome back to another episode of Open Floor, filling in for your host, Michael the Pod Pina. I'm Rohan Nagini, joined today by the host of the Sports Illustrated Weekly podcast, frankly, the co-host of Open Floor. I mean, it's like he's like the super sub, you know, the Tyler Hero, the Lou Williams, I'd say, of Open Floor. It's John Gonzalez. John, how you doing, buddy?
I'm getting comfortable here. I don't want to say co-host, but I'll take sixth man.
Okay.
You know, I want to pitch in and help out.
Yeah. And I say that as someone who has the utmost respect for the sixth man. I think we're on the same page there. It's a valuable part of any team. You know, it's an important role to play. It's a selfless role to play. You know, not everyone's willing to do it. I think it says a lot about your character that you're willing to step in to the host chair when necessary. You delivered some great episodes with Dan Devine. I want to get to a couple housekeeping things real quick before we start today's show. First of all, our apologies for the technical difficulties on Friday's episode. We'll have to get Jeremy Wu back on the show sometime to do our rookie preview. I want to apologize for all the emailers who said that we overthought our Shaquille O'Neal segment. I just want to say I'm a huge fan of Shaq, okay? Let me be clear that I think Shaq would dominate any era of NBA basketball. I also want to let the listeners know, because I tried to let them know last week, I saw the pod in person a little over a week ago. He's doing great. Bumped into him, his wife, and the baby pod on a walk in Brooklyn, which was hilarious.
Amazing.
Yeah, baby pod.
Just randomly bumped into him.
Yeah, it was incredible. I literally yelled as I was walking down the street, "Is that Michael the Pod Pina?"
Wow.
Yeah. We'll have to get that baby some heat gear pretty soon. But, John, we have, in my opinion, a very exciting show today. I think every show is exciting. But today, you know, we're back together, and we got a lot of stuff to discuss. First and foremost being, we got another trickle, you know, another drop of Kevin Durant information this morning. I believe it was Sean Sharania reporting that the Grizzlies are the latest team to show interest in Kevin Durant. Now, one thing about this report, you have to imagine every team in the league has shown interest in Kevin Durant. Every general manager has probably had even a perfunctory conversation about acquiring KD. But, John, what did you make of this latest rumor? You know, what are your thoughts about it?
Yeah, so I woke up this morning and I saw this, and I immediately texted you to say, hey, you know, we're going to need to discuss this for a number of reasons. But according to Shams, the Grizzlies are interested now. That piqued my interest. The tweet starts with, the Grizzlies have 5 first-round picks to theoretically utilize in a Kevin Durant trade. Okay, like now we're off and running, right? Except the next half of that tweet says, but sources say that they will not make Jaren Jackson Jr. or Desmond Bane available.
Oh, come on.
What are we doing here? This doesn't feel like an actual overture. This doesn't feel like a real trade proposal. If you're not, I mean, look, obviously Ja is off the table, but when you're talking about Kevin Durant, everybody else and everything mm-hmm. else must be on the table. Otherwise, why pick up the phone? This is exceedingly dumb.
Yeah, we've gotten so much public posturing in these Durant reports about who teams are or are not willing to part ways with, to the point where I just refuse to take them seriously. I mean, they can say that. They can say that to agents. They can say that to reporters. But you and I here know that that's just ridiculous. Because I think Memphis would be a fantastic destination for Kevin Durant. I wrote about this in a roundtable we did for SI.com earlier this summer. That's the spot I'd like to see him in the most. I think it would be really fun. It would just throw, you know, so much gas on the fire and the rivalry between the Warriors and the Grizzlies. I think it would be great for a small market to have a player like Kevin Durant. It bothers me that Memphis just kind of gave up on D'Anthony Melton earlier this summer, tossed him to your Sixers for a measly first-round pick. Because I think some kind of package, I mean, Kyle Anderson, too, I think is the kind of player who maybe could have been involved here. He left to Minnesota. But I think any package has to start with two of Dylan Brooks, Desmond Bane, and Jaren Jackson. I think you have to part ways with two of those guys. I think you tell the Nets, pick one of Jaren Jackson Jr. or Desmond Bane, and you get Dylan Brooks and whatever else we need to make the salaries match. And I think if you're the Grizzlies, I think you do that trade. I really do. As great as Jaren Jackson Jr. is, as much as I'm a fan of Desmond Bane, shout out to Michael Pena's profile about him, I think you make that trade if you're Memphis. I really do.
Yeah, and I want to be clear. I mean, I really like Triple J, and I really like Desmond Bane. I like them both. I do not like them as much as Kevin Durant. We talked about this the last time before you went on your August sabbatical like the rest of the NBA, where if you can get Kevin Durant for, I don't know, anything, right? Like, no matter what that anything is, it's always going to be expensive. The answer is almost always, in every instance, yes, because he's Kevin Durant. So I understand why the Grizzlies, they've got a young team. They were on the rise last year. They might not want to mess with the trajectory of their team. I understand that unplugging some of these younger guys might seem scary to them. But of course, Triple J and Desmond Bane have to be on the table. And if you had to unload both of them for Kevin Durant, I would still do that because it's Kevin Durant. So I don't think it's much of a thought experiment. I thought the tweet was sort of silly. I'm sure that that's the position that the Grizzlies are taking with the Nets and whatever negotiations that they've undertaken so far. But to say that those two guys are off the table, okay, then what are you sending, right? Like, get out of here. The other thing, though, I want to reverse engineer this. I think, theoretically and on paper, it would be a wonderful landing spot for Kevin Durant, right? Mm-hmm. I really like the shape of the Grizzlies. Obviously, Ja took a massive step. It immediately makes them contenders in the West. If you're Kevin Durant, though, one, are you crazy excited about going back to the Western Conference? And specifically, two, do you want to be in Memphis? No disrespect to Memphis, the place, of course. But you know, he lived in OKC for a long time and then immediately decamped for San Francisco and then Brooklyn. Do you want to be in Memphis?
You know, I think this is a classic beggars can't be choosers situation. He really wants out, clearly, of Brooklyn. I mean, I actually have not been to Memphis. It's like the biggest, it's like the number one black hole on my NBA City resume.
I have. I would like to say, I like Memphis.
Yeah,
I like it.
As someone who hasn't been, I kind of love it already. I'm like, dry rub barbecue, yes. Great fans. I love the grind house. You know, I love the energy of that building and playoff games. I think he would. I'm just saying
it's a smaller place, right? Like, it's
no doubt.
It's one of the more remote NBA outposts, and to leave New York City and previously San Francisco for a much smaller provincial NBA city, I just wonder.
It's not an ideal situation, but it's going to be difficult for him to find an ideal situation considering the number of years left he has on his deal. I think that he seems so desperate to get out. He could do worse than landing on kind of like an up-and-coming team And I don't think he cares about the public criticism, the fake rings talk or whatever too much. But I bet on some level it would be nice for him to go to a team where he could, he'd still be joining a good team, but he's still in a situation where he can put his stamp on things there. Still be, you know, kind of one of the leaders on the team, have an influence about how things are going to go. I think that would be cool. I think that I agree it's not the biggest city, but from a basketball situation standpoint, I think it would be very difficult for him to find a better one. I do. Oh, go ahead, John. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say that. Yeah, from a basketball perspective, I think it would be good for him. It's going to be good for him wherever he goes because he's an incredible player.
Right.
I want to play devil's advocate one more time here.
Okay.
For the Grizz, it's Ja's team. You bring in Kevin Durant. It's maybe not automatically Kevin Durant's team, but you definitely go from you're the top dog, you're one of the young up-and-coming stars, you could very well be the face of the entire league soon enough because you're that good and you've shown that, you know, who knows what that next step looks like for Ja, right? Are we super excited about, you know, it's not like he goes to two, it's probably a 1-1A situation, but how do we feel about that?
I will say it's interesting. The thought did cross my mind, but I believe Ja, didn't he give his most improved trophy to Desmond Bain? He does seem
like
someone.
He literally put it in Desmond Bain's house.
So I think he has shown to be a great teammate. I mean, obviously supported the team when he was injured, you know, still around. I think he's one of those guys that I think Ja would see the bigger picture. This KD topic, though, does make me want to throw a surprise email at you, John.
Oh, okay.
Because. Good. This is now a continuing plot line. Last week, Elliot Gold sent us the email, Tatum for KD straight up. Who says no? Jeremy and I both said the Celtics probably say no. Mm-hmm. Elliot follows up. Okay, back to KD for Tatum straight up. Maybe the Celtics have to say no because of narrative and optics. But if you switch Tatum and KD for last year's finals, the Celtics are definitely better and probably beat the Warriors, right? From a purely basketball standpoint, the Celtics are a better team with KD and Tatum's spot. You know, he's changing my mind a little bit on this one. Are we like going too far with like the Tatum's going to explode in the next 5 years? Like if the Celtics traded for KD right now with just straight at Jason Tatum, wouldn't they be a better team next season?
It's an interesting thought experiment, especially where he says, you know, if you had put KD in the Tatum spot
last
year in
the finals. That's what started to sell me a little bit. Yeah,
he has a point. He has a point because you're right. In a vacuum, that's probably a better team, right? However, it's not a vacuum. And, you know, I don't know what the ceiling is for Tatum. I do know that he's very, very young and incredibly talented. And that team works as currently comprised. So I think when you're factoring in the age component and like the fact that you just got to the finals and, okay, yeah, it didn't come out the way that you were expecting or hoping against the Warriors. But, you know, sky's the limit for that team, you know, without having to do that. It would give me pause, right? He's also your guy. You drafted him.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a Celtic, and like those guys who are that good, that are homegrown, it takes some undoing. It takes some thought before you go, okay, we're going to move on from even for somebody as incredible as KD. Mm. Now, would I still do it? It's KD, right? It goes back to what we talked about earlier. In almost every scenario, I'm probably pulling the trigger, even though. In that specific instance, that would hurt.
Yeah, it would be crazy if a team passed up on Tatum in the draft, if you think about how good he is now. Let us move on to the schedule release that happened last week. First of all, just a really an absurd, long, drawn-out process between all the leaks and blah, blah, blah. It was like 6 days of NBA games trickling out, and it's like, the Jazz are playing whatever on November 22nd. And it's like, what is going on here? Like, what? Like, who is this benefiting? Why does anyone want this? I don't want to get into a sports media discussion about the schedule release, but yeah, they're going to release it all at once. We don't need to do this. Like, it's not a scoop. Like, just, we're going to get the games. We're going to watch the games the days they are played. Like, we don't need the breaking news on such and such game being played. Anyway.
Although James Harden threw his hat into that sports media ring by scooping everybody on Sixers at Knicks. So welcome to the sports media, James Harden.
There we go. Let's start here. You sent me a tweet about which teams had the most national TV games that included their NBA TV games. Are you satisfied with who the league is kind of featuring this season national TV-wise? Is there another team you'd like to see more often? When can we start complaining about the number of national TV games the Knicks have?
Yeah, not surprising, right? I mean, they're the Knicks. They're in a major market. Similarly, I believe the Warriors have half of their games on national TV.
Yes, I do think that I believe it's 42, but I believe that figure includes NBA TV.
Right,
which I mean, some people, yeah.
What disrespect that you're tacitly throwing at NBA TV by hinting that it's not really a national network.
It's fake national TV. I'm sorry. NBA TV is fake national TV. And the NBA is price gouging me by making me add the NBA TV package to NBA League Pass. That's absurd.
Yeah. I mean, look, the major markets, the big teams, the Lakers of the world, the Warriors, the Knicks, they're always going to get a ton of national TV games. Similarly, the big stars, right? I mean, you're going to see a lot of Giannis, a fair amount of Embiid. You're going to get the Celtics because of the Celtics. Twas ever thus, right? I mean, like, this is the way that the NBA and every sports league operates, really. Because, look, it goes back to what we talked about earlier. I love watching Ja. Maybe the casual NBA fan isn't as enamored with the smaller markets, so they're not going to get as much run. So it's not surprising, I guess. I think to your earlier point, though, about the schedule release and all this stuff, like the NBA trying to make this a thing, this is part and parcel of it, right? How many national TV games go out there, the Christmas Day Wars, which I want to discuss with you because the NFL is making its push to battle the NBA on Christmas Day. Traditionally, Christmas Day had been the NBA's day, and now the NFL is trying to encroach on its territory. But the NBA is trying to do the same thing the NFL does with its schedule release. And it's different because, as my friend and former colleague in Philadelphia, Derek Bodner, who does a great job covering the Sixers with his newsletter, he was like, it's 82 games. You're going to play most teams on your side of the conference four times. You're going to play the other conference twice. What are we doing here? And that's what I'm with him. Like, what are we doing here? Yeah, this is just all very silly.
It's all very silly. It's all very stupid. It could not. You're like, everyone who cared about the schedule the day it comes out immediately forgot it the next day. Like, you're just like, what does it even matter? You look at your team's schedule and you're like, oh, we got that tough road trip in December. And then you don't think about it again until that road trip actually happens. I will just say, going back to the Knicks real quick, whatever, like, you know, they get their customary, I think it's like 13 national TV games. My bigger issue is putting them on Christmas every year, which we can get into the Christmas discussion now, but I understand that they're a big market, but, you know, and they do have the Grizzlies on this year, and I believe they have the Nuggets on, I already forgot the Christmas schedule, because it doesn't matter until Christmas Eve which teams are actually playing on Christmas, but why do we keep doing this with the Knicks? It's so absurd. It's so absurd. And then last year they put them on and they're like playing on a weird court. They're like wearing weird uniforms. It looks like a Halloween game. And I'm like, that is what really bothers me, because I'd rather save that spot for a team that we think is actually going to make the playoffs, or actually going to be good, etc. And then, like, the Knicks fans go through, like, oh, Knicks for clicks. And it's like, the Knicks are being shoved down my throat. You know what I'm saying?
This is like a personal affront to you. Look, I will say, as you well know, you'll always curry favor with me with Knicks and Celtics slander. So I get that. That's not a problem. I do say, though, from a marketing perspective, Sixers at Knicks to kick off or tip off Sunday or Christmas Day coverage is a compelling, interesting rivalry. Traditionally, it's got two big markets. You do get Embiid and Harden. I get why they're doing it, but I wanted to, like, the reason why I sent this to you is because I love Christmas Day NBA. I always have.
Of course.
And the NFL is king in America, and now all of a sudden they're throwing out Christmas Day games as well, and they have been, but they've got three games this year, and it's going to create warfare in my household. My wife works for NFL Network, but the reason why I brought this up is I want to know what you'll be watching. This is obviously an NBA pod. You and I will probably be watching the NBA, but the NFL is lingering out there. And when this happened, when the NFL released its Christmas Day schedule relative to the NBA's Christmas Day schedule, I didn't think it was that big a deal until, like, I was talking to all the staffers on Sports Illustrated Weekly, and they think like the NFL schedule will blow away the NBA games. And I was kind of surprised by that because I didn't think that their slate of games was all that compelling compared to the NBA's slate. So can we run through this?
Yeah. Well, first of all, Sports Illustrated pays me to watch the NBA, so I'll probably be watching that, even though I believe the Packers and the Dolphins of Miami are playing on Christmas Day, so I'll probably be keeping an eye on that game, depending on how much it overlaps with the Knicks game, which I try to skip every year now.
You get Packers, Dolphins up against Sixers, Knicks, you don't want to watch the Knicks anyway, and the Dolphins are your team, so you get to do that.
And Sixers Heat was right there. I mean, Sixers Heat was right there. They just played a compelling playoff series. We have the Jimmy Butler, Joel Embiid thing. It was right there. It was right there, and they didn't do it. I am already annoyed at the discourse about the Christmas Day games because I think the NFL is going to do monster ratings like they always do. They're like the monster from Nope. They just suck everything up. They just, you know, they take out the power and they just are, you know, sucking everything up through their giant mouth hole. That's what the NFL does. And I already know, like, all the NFL reporters, every single one, they all have the same haircut. You know the guy that I'm talking about. All six of them are just going to be, like, tweeting out the ratings as soon as they can, comparing it to the NBA ones. And it's like, here we go with this, you know, the latest round of how much more popular the NFL is than the NBA. And I just cannot bring myself to care about it. But what I do care about is how embarrassing it is when, like, the reporters of their own league, like, feel the need to hype up the product so much.
Yeah, well, I mean, I understand why the NFL wants to be on Christmas. I understand why
Christmas
NFL reporters...
Christmas is actually on a Sunday this year, right?
It's on a Sunday.
Yeah.
So it's not like they're completely blowing up their...
Right. In the past, they used to, like, would just play all the games on a Saturday in that scenario or something like that, right?
Right. Yeah. So the other game, the other two games, because I want to run through the schedule here. So they have the Broncos at the Rams, and then you get... So it's Russell Wilson and
Broncos defending, country, let's ride.
And the defending Super Bowl champions, and then you've got Tom Brady and the Buccaneers at the Arizona Cardinals. And the rest of the NBA schedule is, of course, you've got the Lakers at the Mavs, the Bucks at the Celtics. They had a you were talking about a great series that was just there. They won seven games. You get Grizz at Warriors, so Ja against Steph. And then the nightcap is kind of boring. Not boring, but I like watching Suns and Nuggets. But in terms of like national appeal, I don't know how much pop you're getting from that. So
it's almost like Nikola Jokic is the undercover MVP. He finally gets a Christmas game though. After
he is the undercover MVP, but he doesn't get a Christmas Day game. I wonder if the NBA even thinks about what the NFL is doing when they're scheduling these games.
They can't. I mean, they're going to get hammered in the ratings. I mean, what could they do? I don't know what they can do at this point. I mean, short of just like planting stories in the, like, there's nothing they can do. They're going to get hammered. I mean, do you think the ratings will be close? Not to get into full on ratings talk, but
probably not.
I mean, we can already see it. We already know which Substack writers are going to write about the ratings mess and how it connects to like the cultural evolution in America. And we're all going to hate that piece. We're all going to hate the tweets about the, like, I just watch the sport you like. And like, that's it. You know what I mean? Like, all these leagues are making a tremendous amount of money, but yeah, it's not even like, it doesn't bother me that the NFL is more popular than the NBA. That's just, you know, life, but it bothers me the way people try to read into it. And it's going to happen. We're not going to be able to escape it this year.
I personally, I'm just really excited about a very Merry Christmas in the Gonzalez household where my wife is watching the NFL in one room and on the other side of the house, I'm watching the NBA as our Lord intended.
Yes.
So it's going to be great.
Shout out to Kyrie Irving, by the way. People talk about representation, but they asked him, I think, a couple years ago what it means for him to play on Christmas, and he was like, it doesn't mean anything to me.
Yeah.
Shout out to all the people who, you know, grew up in a non-Christian household and also are like, oh, cool, I'm off from
sports
school
and
we get 10 hours of basketball. This is awesome. Yeah. You know, let me know about the Diwali day release, you know, let me know. But
amazing.
Moving on, John, you sent me this, which I was excited for this, and then somehow it escaped my mind that this actually happened, and then you sent me about what actually happened. Of course, I'm referring to the crossover event held in Seattle over the weekend. A lot of hype, LeBron James kind of returning to play basketball in Seattle for the first time in 15 years, I believe. Unfortunately, the event just kind of went haywire quickly. The Seattle Times had a great story about it I was reading today. First, I think the event was just not really prepared to handle the number of people who were trying to attend. You know, there was basically a mob at the front door to even get into the event. Then there were so many people inside. There was too much humidity on the court. They had to stop the game after 1.5 quarters. In the Seattle Times story, they said they couldn't open the doors and let out some of the humid air because they were worried about more people charging in. And it honestly just makes me disappointed. I think it's so great that the NBA players who want to participate in these pro-am games, it's a lot of fun. It reminds me of that vibe we had during the 2011 lockout. It was so fun when players were popping up at courts around the country. I think it's sad that this happened to Seattle, which deserves a basketball team. What'd you make of this, John?
Yeah, I was going to ask you. All right, so for people who don't know, all NBA contracts essentially have a for the love of the game clause, which basically means that any NBA player can play in any basketball game anywhere whenever they want, provided that, you know, it's not for like another team during the NBA season. So if you want to play pickup, you can play pickup. If you want to play in the crossover, you can play the crossover. You want to play the Drew League, you can do that. I wonder, though, how much benefit there is to the guys who are up there. It was awesome that LeBron went up there and played around with some kids and whatever, right? But like, part of it's comic, right? Where you've got tweets, people talking about, okay, it was so hot inside and there was so much humidity and the floors were so wet that they had to call the game early, and also the game started late because somebody pulled the fire alarm, right? And like, all that stuff, all of that is kind of funny. But then you have other things like, you know, Chet Holmgren rolling his ankle, and who knows like what kind of lingering effect that might have. And then also, you know, players were worried. The reason why the game stopped was because the floor was so wet that they were worried about when they jump and they land, something bad happening. That's where you go, oh, yeah, maybe this isn't so great, right? Like, playing in the Drew League, one thing. Playing in, you know, the Olympics or the World Championships or something like that, one thing. Playing in the crossover on a humid floor where it's like a fire hazard and you can't open the doors because you're worried about people rushing in, probably not as great.
I hear you, but I'm all in on, like, you can't just stay wrapped up, you know, hermetically sealed in a bubble during the offseason. Sure. You know, these guys are expected to come into training camp in amazing shape every year. And they want to hoop. You know what I mean? Like, if you get hurt playing basketball, that's unfortunate, obviously. But, you know, how else are you going to get better? You know what I mean? At some point, you just got to play. I'm all for it. I would never want to discourage the idea of LeBron James playing basketball, you know, in a non-Lakers capacity. And, you know, and they mentioned in that Seattle Times story, you know, they prioritized kids, you know, coming in to see the game. So like adults were waiting in line. And that's cool. And like, these games are free. And, you know, I remember when the Heat got criticized for that welcome parade rally thing they did when they signed the big three, which granted was ludicrous, but I was there and it was the best night of my life. That was a free event and it was really cool for people who, you know, just got to show up and see their favorite players, even if they weren't playing a basketball. You know, I think Chris Bosh likes to say they filled the stands, even though no one even touched a basketball that night. I think it's really cool. I love anything that connects me back to, you know, we all at some point in our lives like picked up a basketball, like went down to our local park and played with whoever was there. You know what I mean? And I love that spirit. So yeah, the thought of like injuries and stuff, obviously it would be terrible, but it doesn't even cross my mind because it's just a reminder of like, oh yeah, like LeBron James started playing basketball like the same way everyone else did. You know what I mean? Like playing at a local gym, playing at a local park. And that like genuinely brings me joy.
Yeah, that part's great. I'm just saying that there's a level of due diligence where, like, you know, there are some non-NBA games. Pick up, like, okay, we both live in L.A., right? L.A. is, like, the epicenter of offseason NBA. And there are pickup games all over the city, including and especially the games that they run over at UCLA, right? Or, those floors are okay. It's not and they're not worried about slipping.
Billionaire mansions.
That's what I mean. Yeah. That's all I'm saying. This is some level of like due diligence on like what kind of, where are we playing this game, and is anybody pulling the fire alarm ahead of time? That's all I'm saying.
Wow, really coming in like the Grinch here on the crossover and pickup games. You want a humidity check? You want in a?
I just don't want guys to be breaking ankles on wet floors in August. That's all.
One of my favorite things about cricket, like watching cricket with my dad growing up, is like before the match, one of the commentators would go onto the field and he'd be kneeling down on the pitch, like squatting down near it and like touching it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a really dry pitch today. Like, you're going to want to bowl first, or, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, this is why it's a batter's pitch today. Like that, they need you doing that. They need you going down on the court, touching it. Yeah. Yep. You're like, you're like the humidity percentage on the floor right now.
There's a reason why they got during the regular season, those kids with the squeegees and the towels, right? I mean, come on.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe that's all they needed. Maybe they just all needed it. A more legit squeegee/towel operation. Let's get to what I thought is, you know, the biggest NBA news of the offseason. I think the best signing of the offseason, bar none. Something that I think could genuinely affect the championship race.
I'm excited about this for you.
It's the captain. It's the real Mr. 305. The carrier of culture himself, Udonis Haslem, returning to the Miami Heat for his 20th season. Just an absolute legend. I wish a few years ago they'd given him a max contract instead of Hassan Whiteside. I mean, he's just a legend, John. There's no other way to put it. Your reaction to this momentous signing and what it means for the playoff picture in the East.
The 20th season for Udonis Haslem in the NBA is just really remarkable. He just turned 42 years old, bro, and he's still out there. Like, he's obviously now more of a, you know, locker room veteran presence, extra coach. Also, like, I'll make sure Jimmy Butler doesn't get out of line and I'll threaten to fight him periodically, like during the regular season guy. But he is such, like, we joke about the cliche that is Heat culture. But he really is.
I don't
is
joke
Heat
about
culture.
It, but other people
I know,
do.
But everybody else does. But he is very much the embodiment of whatever that is, right? I mean, he's been doing it forever. I'm reluctant to ask this question because I'm older than you, but I'm going to do it anyway. Where were you 20 years ago?
20 years ago, 2003, I was...
2002, Holmes.
2002, that's right. Well, he joined the team in 2003. He joined the team in 2003. 20 years ago, I was like, it was 2002. I was like, will the Florida Marlins ever win a World Series again? Mm-hmm. Sure enough, they did the next year. I was like, the Heat, they really got to get, you know, I was watching the Sunshine Network, as they called it back in the day. We got to get someone to help Caron Butler out.
Were you in high school? How old were you then?
How old in 2002 was I in high school?
I don't know,
John,
how old you were.
You're going to want to cover your ears for this one, but
Oh no.
In 2002, I was in fourth grade.
That is so depressing.
I was in Miss Francis's class listening to Get Busy by Sean Paul.
Oh, my
being
God.
Being like, they will never make a song better than this one.
I forget frequently that you're essentially a zygote. And then I am considerably older than you.
Even though you look so much better than me. It's really disconcerting.
In Dallas, covering the Mavericks, one of my first gigs out of college, and, you know, trying to find my way in this business. And you were, you know, coloring and having recess and lunchtime snacks and naps. Amazing. That's how long Udonis Haslem has been doing this, though, to put that in perspective, that you now look at you, your glow up from fourth grade
now. I was trying to figure out if Lauren Jones had a crush on me. That was all I could think about in fourth grade.
What was the answer?
It's up in the air. I mean, she went to the fifth grade dance with someone else, but I mean, I think I just, you know, I blew it. It's fine.
But congrats to Udonis and congrats to you on this very long relationship that you've had with him.
Yes. In all seriousness, I just want to say about Udonis Haslem returning to the Heat, I love it. And I understand why he's become like a source of annoyance for other fan bases. The Heat fans, myself included, are annoying about him. I don't blame anyone else who thinks we're ridiculous about him. Like, you're entitled to that opinion. Certainly, I love Udonis Haslem. He's one of my all-time favorite players. My personal way of enjoying basketball is, yeah, I want to see my favorite players be on my favorite teams for as long as possible. So I'll never... Udonis Haslem will always hold a space on the Miami Heat. I you know, bring him back for 25 seasons. I don't care. I don't want to watch him walk away from the game. And as far as the impact he has, I know he plays very little, but, you know, I did a story on Max Strus in the playoffs. He talked about guys like PJ Tucker, Udonis Haslem, what they do in practices between games, you know, helping them play defense. Like, there's a reason why Max Strus is on the playing in the fourth quarter of a playoff game. It's because of how much he's improved on defense and how much of that happens because of the veterans who are in his ear that you don't see. You know, Omer Yurtseven had a long stretch playing the season when Bam Adebayo was hurt. He said, I played one-on-one with UD every day. That's why I'm such a good rebounder. So Udonis mentioned it in his press conference or his announcement, I guess, about why he's returning to the team. You know, all the undrafted guys, there's a reason why they find success in Miami, and he's kind of a living embodiment of that. So, you know, people focus so much, oh, he doesn't play. You know, why doesn't he just coach? I think it makes a difference. They found something for them. It works. I want to ask you, though. Like, is there a – I think AI doesn't really count. He was too good. But if there was, like, a Sixers legend that could still be on the team that was entering their 20th season with the Sixers, who would you want it to be?
Yeah, that's a good question. There's not a ton of Sixers legends where you go, like, you know, who
Eric
aren't the
Snow?
Allen Iverson.
Come on.
right. Yeah, Eric Snow.
Yeah.
I did love that team, though. I will say that they kind of did do this with Allen Iverson at the end of his career.
Yeah.
He stopped playing in 2010, and I'll just tell you a quick story about this. So 2010, while he's like still with the Grizzlies for like a half a second, a friend of mine had like a sports auction for charity, and there was a whole bunch of different things on offer. And at the time, 2010, Sixers were not a good team. So there were, you know, you could bid on different things. So there was tickets to a Sixers game. So I put my name on the list for the minimum bid. And I figured, well, somebody else will come in behind me and outbid me. So I'm not going to have to pay for these tickets and go to this game. Literally nobody else at the auction bid on the Sixers tickets. And I was like, bummer. Now I've got to pay for this and go to this game. It turned out to be Allen Iverson's return game. So it ended up working out great. And it was really cool to see everybody like super excited about having him back in the building. But it really was just like the farewell tour, right? Like,
yeah.
It was, thank you for your service. We appreciate it. We're going to cheer the hell out of you. We're going to pack the building one last time. And, you know, it didn't last very long. But this is a much better run for Udonis Haslem in his never-ending farewell. How much longer do you think he can do this? He's 42. This is Tom Brady range.
This is going to be his last season. I'm pretty confident. I'm not reporting that.
Okay.
But I'm 99% confidence that this is going to be his final season. I think he wanted to get to 20.
Nice round number.
And yeah, he played a little bit last season. He played a little bit more, and I enjoyed his minutes. Like, I think he can still like actually be a rotation backup big defensively in the regular season, at least. I genuinely, the years that Hassan Whiteside was on the team, wish they were starting Udonis Haslem over him. I saw Hassan Whiteside at the Fort Lauderdale airport when I landed in Florida a couple weeks ago. I wonder if he's going to land anywhere. All right, John, you teased a mystery mailbag question to me via text that I want to get to now. You said this is a crowdsourced mailbag question of sorts.
Yeah.
So I want to, floor is yours, brother.
I want to take you through something that happened to me over the weekend. It is kind of a crowdsourced mailbag question. So what happened was I'm on Twitter, you know, doom scrolling per use, and I see Mikal Bridges tweet something, and he tweets out, damn Mets, hold that L, right? So Mikal Bridges went to Villanova. He's a Philly area guy. Like all Philly area guys, we hate all things New York, especially including the Mets. Thought it was pretty funny. because I like when anybody throws shade at the Mets as a Phillies fan. Mm-hmm. And I quote tweeted, I still can't believe that the Sixers traded him, meaning Mikal Bridges, because like that I'm in favor of all the Mets
trade.
Slander.
Yeah. Figure
it's a throwaway tweet. For people who don't remember, on draft night, Sixers take local hometown favorite whose mom worked for the Sixers. Works for the team, Mikal Bridges, and they trade him for a guy named Zaire Smith, who I'm sure nobody remembers, and a pick. I figure this is like just a throwaway tweet. My mentions get full of people arguing, one, either in favor of, yeah, I can't believe they traded Mikal Bridges, two, or the opposite, no, it's better that they traded him because the pick that they got back ended up turning into Tyrese Maxey, and the Maxey stands really love him, and they were arguing, many of them, that Maxey is both better and has a bigger upside than Mikal Bridges, which I'm going to recuse myself from this conversation because I was losing my mind. I was like, look, I don't know. I just really like Mikal Bridges, and I thought his Mets tweet was funny. My question for you, Ro, is where do you fall on this debate?
This is a fascinating question.
Yeah.
So this is where I think context matters incredibly, because I think let's say the Suns is presently constructed are a better team with Mikal Bridges than with Tyrese Maxey, right? Mm-hmm. I think Maxey is the kind of prospect you want on your team because you can see someone, he could be my point guard for the next 10 years and maybe turn into a 20-point-per-game scorer. I don't think Bridges is that kind of player, but if you think about the Sixers at the time, the team they had, if you had put they were missing a player like Mikal Bridges to put around Embiid and Simmons. So that's a really difficult one. I think in a vacuum, if you're building a team from scratch, you probably want Maxey over Bridges. But if you're a contender and Bridges is your third or fourth best player, you're in fantastic shape. I mean, he's one of the top perimeter defenders in the league. He's a knockdown 3-point shooter. Mm-hmm. He has a little bit more to his game. He can go off the dribble. He can run a pick and roll in a pinch. I think a good fast break player. I interviewed Mikal Bridges for a story I did on perimeter defense at the start of the season, because if you remember the start of the season, they'd kind of tightened up some of the rules and it felt like defense was coming back. And I was telling Mikal Bridges, I was like, man, like, it's so fun watching you play defense. Like, you know, there are certain guys who like actually, and he's like, you know, I was like, I think you're one of the better defenders in the league. And he was like, hey, man, I appreciate the gas, but let's not get carried away. So he's also a pretty humble dude. So I'm a big Mikal Bridges fan. But
me too.
Yeah, I just think that if you're starting a team from scratch, I go Maxey. But if you're a contender right now, I'd rather have Mikal Bridges. And that's not a slight on Maxey, who's fantastic. But I just look for guys who are super high floor players in the postseason. And Bridges is that kind of guy.
Yeah, I in the moment when the Sixers traded Mikal Bridges, they couldn't have known that it would end up like with Maxey falling into their lap.
Yeah.
At the time, that trade was a bad trade, right? Like,
yes, and the Maxey pick was what, in the 20s, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a home run. I mean, again, credit to them, but yeah, it was dire there for a minute.
It ended up working out for them. I want to say, though, you know, I love Maxey. I think he's incredible. He's a great fit for the team and also specifically for the city. Like, there's nobody in Philly who has a bad word to say about Maxey. So that part's all to the good. The Bridges component is just interesting to me. Like, when people were saying he's better, Maxey is better and has a bigger upside, I'm like, I don't know. Because on the one hand, like, Bridges is obviously a better two-way player. He's a much better defender. And for all the reasons you just outlined, like, he's probably never going to have that star pop potential that Maxey does, but you slot him into a contender and you're just like, oh yeah, he can guard anybody on the perimeter and he's an awesome 3-point shooter. Like, every team would kill for this. And
yeah. Like, he's probably always going to be paid less than Maxey in his career. It's really a fascinating thing. And it's just funny because if you think, like, you know, this season, Maxey was obviously great. And the year before, we saw the potential, but he wasn't the player he was in 2022. You think about, yeah, like the 2021 Sixers, they would have been sick with Mikal Bridges. I mean,
yeah.
So it's funny. I mean, it kind of ended up working out for them, but it took a couple years. And I think that I wouldn't say they regret it, but I don't know. It's interesting to think if they had Bridges. I remember tweeting about it once, like there's a million Sixers what ifs. Like, one of the basic ones is just like, what if they had actually kept Mikal Bridges? Like, maybe the Simmons Embiid era is still going right now.
Maybe, yeah. That hypothetical that took me down this rabbit hole, and all because Mikal Bridges and I and everybody else from Philly share a hatred of the Mets. So I guess thanks, Mets.
Mikal Bridges also sent one of my favorite tweets of all time, which was, I really want to see a young boy perform Nevada, even if he just came out and did that one song and left. I am with you. Mikal, sign me up for that. I would just, you know, give me Nevada by Youngboy 8 times in a row. I'd pay like $100 to see that.
Super same. Sign me up. I'm coming with you.
I can't tell if you know this song or you're like, what is this youth talking about?
Well, I mean, you were in the fourth grade eating glue and paste when I was like covering a professional basketball team. But aside from that.
In my defense, I'm pretty sure we put on like a pretty intricate holiday play that year. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it wasn't all glue and paste, brother.
Fair enough.
We had some, yeah. Anyway, that will do it for today's episode of Open Floor. John, thank you so much for sitting back in the host chair again. This was a lot of fun. Thank you to all our listeners. We should have some more fun episodes coming up as we approach the start of the season. I know we didn't hit the mailbag today, but please keep those emails coming. openfloormail@gmail.com. Until the next episode, please continue to enjoy the NBA offseason.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.